Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, regardless of when you are tuning in. Thank you for tuning in to Flippers Always Win, episode 3 coming at you. I am your host, Flip. We just had a wild episode of Survivor this past week, a tribal council that, of course, ended with 4 different players getting votes, including a guy who everybody knew had an idol, which, you know what? I'd like to see more votes getting thrown at people who do have idols. I think even if it's not the best game move, I think it's really, really fun. I like that Saul threw down Rome's name because there was, I suppose, a chance that Rome plays his idol for Genevieve. Maybe if Rome was a little bit less self-centered, self-indulgent, that could have been that much more of a chance. But because he was so unaware, likely that anybody could be going against his plan, he probably didn't even consider the fact that Genevieve was nearly at risk. Had Teenie and Keyshawn been a little bit more flexible in what they wanted to do, and personally, I think it was the wrong move for Teenie and Keyshawn to go with Genevieve and Rome. I think the smarter play on their part likely would have been to go get Genevieve out. Rome plays his idol, exhausts it because he had to anyway, roll with Saul and Asia, who it seemed like if they had their way of it, that would have been what they would have been more likely to do. And that's what I was thinking was going to happen. So not only am I a little disappointed that my own prediction didn't come true, I am a little bit flummoxed that they decided to work with Rome moving forward, knowing that he was not going to have an idol moving past this tribal council. Maybe they like Genevieve more than we've seen. She hasn't gotten a lot of screen time. And maybe Asia was a little bit too strong in her convictions to feel as though, oh, really want to work with this person. So I can see that. And I'm glad they didn't take Saul out, one, because he's a challenge beast, and two, because I like the guy and I want to see him move forward in this game. I want to see more of Saul. It sounded like he's going to go on an idol hunt from the clip we got of the last episode where Rome is confronting him and Saul saying, you know, get away from me. Can I have some free space? And Rome saying, no, obviously Saul's likely looking for an idol, or at least Rome thinks that he is looking for an idol. Rome. What do we say? What are we doing here? You know, I'm not here to rain on a lot of people's parades. I'm not here to talk a lot of smack. But when somebody is truly as selfish and self-centered and egotistical and self-absorbed, and honestly malicious in terms of him throwing the fish bones at Asia, that was uncalled for. Sure, he's doing a lot for his tribe to provide in terms of, you know, getting fish, but nobody asked him. There's other people there that are likely capable. I don't think I need to explain. I'm preaching to the choir in all likelihood about the negative aspects of what Rome is bringing to his tribe and to the game. But it's very bothersome, and it definitely gets me thinking, what are some smaller particular pet peeves that would get my goat out there? And I do think the biggest one truly is self-absorption. We all have our moments. We all certainly can do better at times, myself included. But somebody who is just purely as self-absorbed as what we've seen out of him out there, that would rub me the wrong way a lot more than it would rub me the wrong way, say, a person like Andy, who of course has his own quirks and is frustrating. I would rather deal with a wishy-washy, chaotically game-minded person than a self-absorbed narcissist. That of course begs the question, what is your biggest green flag out there? That's a little harder. What are you looking for in somebody you can work with out on Survivor? You know, part of me just feels like it just has to click out there, and it's almost one of those things where it's process of elimination, where you feel not great about certain people, you feel okay about others, and then whoever's left over that's better than that, that's your person, and you make it work. And on some level, I'm sure that's how it goes a lot of the time. But if you actually were able to select a characteristic of a partner, what is it? And it's not just they listen to you. I think if I had to pick one attribute, it would be kindness. The reason I say that, one, obviously, being around somebody who's kind is a lot better than being around somebody who's not. But in the game sense, you know, somebody who's kind and it's genuine kindness, that doesn't mean that they're not a strategist. That doesn't mean they can't make a move. But I feel as though somebody who displays genuine kindness would have a tougher time turning on you, even if it was the right move for them. Not to say that they wouldn't do it, but a kind heart oftentimes may be a loyal heart. And ultimately, you want somebody who's going to not stab you in the back, right? But if you have the strategic chops, you feel, and they're kind and you're working together, that feels like a solid block. And it also is an attractive thing for people who aren't working as closely with, or maybe are like your sub-alliances, right? Because if somebody's kind, easier to want to be around. Really just a glue, a person who's going to glue people together. And if they're going to be most glued to you, that is a huge benefit. I think you see that with, you know, Steven and JT, not to say that JT wasn't a strategist, that Steven wasn't kind, but at least that's the way that they were edited. The kind person with the strategist, of course, they each had a little bit more behind the curtains than that. You know, you could say Maria and Charlie from Survivor 46, but at least from the edit, I always felt that Maria was a lot more cunning even before what happened at the end. And again, it's not that Charlie wasn't kind, but he was obviously more of a strategist. I think Charlie and Ben actually is probably the better example, despite the fact that we saw Charlie and Maria as the duo. Ultimately, Charlie and Ben were just as much, if not more, of a duo. Oh, you know what? Of course, another good one is, and again, less of a specific duo the entire time, although they were working together largely, Tony and Wu. Tony and Wu, somebody kind with a strategist. I think it's fair to say Tony was not necessarily kind, although he was giving in the sense that he was a provider and he didn't eat as much as other people ate, and he provided. And in that sense, he was caring. But on a second-to-second conversational basis, certainly not somebody you'd say that's a kind person, whereas Wu had the big heart and was good to everyone and to his own detriment. So if we're looking at a strategist plus kind for this season, I'm not sure I see like as many obvious kind people. Your targets for that are probably Teeny. I think Andy is very kind. That's probably the best thing you could say about Andy, is that he is very kind. And I think it's actually going to get him far. He is starting to pull himself out of the hole a little bit. I really see him actually getting fairly far in this game. He has no chance to win. On Tuku, I think it's Kyle, although he was getting annoyed with Sue. But I don't think that makes them a not a kind person. I think Tiana and Kyle, I don't see them necessarily getting super far as a duo. But if I had to pick one duo that I feel as though encapsulates strategy plus kind, I think Tiana, the strategist, Kyle, the kind person, the glue person. It feels like Sue and Kyle can't work together. But it also feels like that tribe has a lot of athletic people who can get the job done in challenges. And I think that they have a really good shot of going into the merge with the most people, if not all five remaining right now. I really feel that way. Maybe down the line, you see that fracture pretty much as soon as they get to the merge. I believe that Sue would try to go after Kyle. But I think Tiana and Kyle have the best chance of being that strategic plus kind. I think it's been proven to work. We'll see what happens with it this season. We have a great show coming up for you. Avery is here. And she's ready to roll. You're not going to want to miss her. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. We have no sponsorships on this podcast. So in place of an ad, I would like to talk to you about this yellow chair that's in my apartment. I first got it in 2018, I believe, when I helped my cousin move when I was living in Chicago. And she had this chair. And she really didn't need it anymore. And so she gave it to me. It's this metal slatted chair. It's not very comfortable, but it's got room to hold stuff on it. And it has held stuff on it over the years. Right now, the game Mastermind is on it, as well as some hexagonal shelving. The yellow chair, it holds stuff.
Andy is a weird old guy. He's got crazy big old buggy eyes. He fell off of the beam. He freaks out his team. We'll see if he's here next week.
And we're back on Flippers Always Win. Avery is here. Avery is the longtime friend of Julia, my partner, who has her own segment on this podcast. You may have heard if you've listened before. Welcome to the show, Avery.
I am pumped to be here. I've been taking notes. I've been listening to all the eps. I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
I want you to take us through your survivor journey because you have an interesting one yourself. I know that you watched when you were younger and you're recently back into the fandom. So just take me through your experience with Survivor in your life.
Yeah, it is somewhat similar to yours, where I watched when it was like first coming out. So I remember like the first episode, like I watched it with my mom, Jana, every week. We bought the buffs. And like when a new season would start, we would like research, you know, the new people who were going to be on it and kind of like pick early favorites, sort of like you do here. We'd be like, oh, I really think we're going to like her because she's, you know, like from the South and like into the same kind of stuff. Or like, you know, she's a mom of three and seems really hardcore. So we watched, I can't remember exactly when we stopped watching. And at this point, I'm too scared to go back and look because it's going to spoil all of the winners. Like, I think that's the danger with Googling anything from Survivor. Like, I want to go back and be like, Google season eight. But if I haven't seen season eight, it's just going to tell me immediately who won.
So you were watching from the beginning.
Yeah, watched from the beginning and then totally fell off. Probably when I went to college, because it was something I watched with my mom. Yeah, so watched it through my childhood and then totally fell off until it was so funny because you started this podcast being like, I personally am growing this like Survivor fan army. And we were hanging out on July 4th and like the fireworks were over and we were back and you were like so casual about it. You were like, what if we like put on Survivor? Like it was so chill and casual. I like didn't even know inside you were like freaking out. You were like so close to your goal of like getting us to watch Survivor again.
That does bode well for me out on the island. Like if I can really get what I want but do it in a casual way, huh?
Didn't even see it coming. We just
blindside.
You didn't, and you had the season picked out and everything. Like we were like, oh well, where would we even start? You were like, obviously this exact season. The one you will like the most that I have calculated.
Well, yeah, as much as I'd love to take care, I do believe that I went back and forth with Julia on the exact one because okay. We had a few in mind, I think, and we started you off on Millennials Gen X.
Yep, which was a very good one. Very good to get back into. I like it because it seems like the 30s series is very different from the 40s. Mm-hmm. And so right now I've watched very weird amounts. So I have like probably eight of the early seasons, like the 10s.
I think you've watched more because you said you watched it throughout your entire childhood.
I don't know.
Up until high school.
I'll have to look and like get back to you. But
yeah.
And then the 30s, some of them, and then the 40s. And even between those, it's crazy how different it is.
Yeah.
So like watching the 30s after watching the earlier seasons was its own shock because there's like all this new stuff going on. Like I remember when they used to find an idol in the first one. And you talked about this a little bit last episode. It was just like the holy grail because that was really all you could find. Like there weren't these crazy advantages. Like there weren't like swaps and like shot in the dark and beware and like all this stuff, which some of that isn't even in the 30s.
The powers themselves are different. But in terms of, I don't know, the way people are behaving, the way that Jeff is, like what are the main differences from your perspective from current day to what you remember?
Old Survivor, I feel like the way you won was by like sticking to an alliance, loyalty, integrity isn't the right word because it's not that the new players don't have integrity, but I feel like there must have been some sort of monumental shift.
And you haven't seen it.
And I haven't seen it.
And I know exactly where it happened.
Okay, well, you have to tell me. Yeah. You have to tell me which season it is. Yeah. Because that's what was so shocking when I picked up Millennials versus Gen X, and also the name of this podcast, Flippers Always Win. Like, people were flipping left and freaking right, and I could not believe it because Old Survivor was like, this is our alliance, like, this is the plan. And then you just, like, sort of, from what I remember, you just, like, stuck with the plan, and, like, every once in a while, you know, something crazy might happen. The 30s, it just feels like every episode, I never freaking know who's going home. So that is something that was shocking.
What were you watching for game-wise at the time? What are you watching for now? I imagine it's probably not the same thing.
In the earlier seasons, it was curious to see like who was in alliances and why and like how they chose to like stick together, and like the merge felt like a bigger deal because it was these two tribes who'd been separated for 20 days almost coming together. So it's sort of the trajectory of all TV, right? Like old cable shows used to wrap up nicely at the end of every episode. And now they have to leave you on a cliffhanger to like keep you coming back. So I think the evolution makes sense with like the more interesting and more sort of vicious at times gameplay.
As technology, as media has enhanced, we've become a faster paced society. Mm-hmm. We were a slower society back in the day. I think you got more personality at times because you had less game moves to be made. True. So you had more time to focus on some of the survival aspects, some of the actual like getting to know who these people really are.
I think the rewards were more interesting.
They were.
Because like people were out there for so much longer and so much more like beaten down in a way. Like I remember they'd win like a spa, you know, like massage and like stay in like a 5-star hotel.
Going like the seventh wonder of the world in a helicopter.
Yeah, you're like, holy crap, I want to do that. So I think there was something intriguing about just sort of watching people be people. And I understand why they've changed what they've changed. And I do like it.
What do you like about current day, since it is so different specifically?
I think all of the advantages do make it a lot more interesting. Like someone just sitting on their idol, even in the 30s, this happened where someone gets an idol and they'll just sit on it literally for the entire season. And you know they have it, which is like mildly entertaining. But I think the switch to these sort of like time sensitive things is a really good move. Because on one hand, you're like, oh, that's a bummer. I'd kind of like to see how they would play it if they had a choice. But them not having a choice, sort of, it does like get the ball rolling on certain things that might have just mellowed.
Right. Does a player like Rome get cast in the early days? First of all, does a person like Rome exist in the early days? Is that somebody that they're looking for? Somebody who is out for blood, like immediately?
I think no, in the super obvious sense. I mean, I think he just would have been voted off immediately in like season two. They'd just be like, get out of here.
And
like,
he would have been voted off immediately had he not had the idol this time. But that's the thing is that even if they had the idol early on, they're not necessarily even telling anybody.
Yeah, it's like a super secret. I think my take on Rome is it is a game. He's playing it like a game.
What do you not like as much? What would you either like to see different or gone back to?
Starting with three tribes. Mm-hmm. On Millennials versus Gen X, they started with two tribes, obviously, Millennials and Gen X. And then at some point, not, I guess, merged, but sort of blended into three teams, which I think was really smart because it mixes up the people. They got new alliances forming.
So you liked that, but you don't like that they're not doing that right now.
Yes, because I feel like when it's three, teams could not lose anyone and make it to the merge when they start with three, in theory. It doesn't happen often, but like, I like when it's two because it sort of pits, you know, the classic two teams rivals, and then it mixes everybody together to make new alliances. And then it mixes everybody together for a final time when it's like individual game. And I know that I said the idols being time sensitive is a good thing, but I do wish there were maybe a few more that lasted a little longer because like you said, you don't really get a chance to like really think about how you're going to use it. Like when Gabe played it, he didn't want to, like you said, make himself like more of a target, but there's barely any strategy to that idol play, which is kind of a bummer. So one just feels sort of silly.
So let's talk a little bit different than the game at hand. You watched with your mom growing up. So I'm sure you had some nice memories there. You told me that you bought the buffs.
Oh, yeah.
You bought the buffs. Now you're watching with Ashwin, your boyfriend. How has it been watching with Ashwin?
Ashwin was not super on board at first. And it was kind of one of those days, I think we were like recovering from something where I watched like three in a row and he was sort of like in and out doing things. And then finally by the third season, he did that classic sort of dude watching your show thing where he's like, oh my God, can you believe she said that? And I like turned around. I didn't even know he was there.
Is that not the best moment?
Oh my God. Yeah. Cause you're like, obviously the show is a great show. It's very popular. And the guy's like, sort of like, I'm not quite good at it. And then like 2 seconds later, they're like, can you believe? I'm like, yes, bitch, I know. So then I think it was during, it must've been Millennials Gen X. Cause I think like we watched the first one together. He said he doesn't like the earlier episodes as much because there's just, it's what I'm doing right now where I'm like, what's her name?
It's hard to, first of all, it's hard to know who's even there.
Yeah.
You're not getting a ton of, and you want to like latch on to some people that you can like either hate or love or root for, right? And you can't really do that as hard. I will say that is something different. These recent seasons, there has been an Andy there's been a Rome more and more often.
Oh, like a very memorable character.
Just somebody who loses it immediately.
Oh, that's fun.
And I think that might speak more to our generation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. As a couple, is it something that you're like talking about? Is it something that's just there? Like, what's the level of it?
Oh, yeah. It's one of our few shows where I feel like we go phones down.
Wow.
Because you know how there's like sort of background shows that you put on and you're both kind of like tooling around on your phone. Right. I've been playing Pokemon Arceus. I don't know how you say it.
I don't either.
On my Switch obsessively. So there are shows where we're both sort of doing other things. But Survivor is phones down, baby. Like, we're in this.
That's awesome.
To win this. So
how do you talk about Survivor when you watch it? Like, what's so like Mary and Greg last week, they talked about like the what ifs. They talk about the what would you do out
yes.
there. Emily and Jesse, they look for different things, but it feels like they talk more about like the community aspect, the like how are people getting along. So how do you and Ashwin talk about Survivor together?
I think it's partly superiority complex bonding, because when you're watching from your couch, you're like, what an idiot. Like, it just seems like everyone is making the worst decision possible. So we definitely bond over like, why would they do that?
So you're trashing people.
Yeah, we are so much smarter. We would do that differently, which I'm sure when you're actually there, you know, it would not be as obvious. And so it's definitely like what ifs. It's definitely not judging people in a mean way, but judging their poor decision making.
Sure. And is there anything more fun than to judge people for their poor decision making in life?
Almost. I mean, being right, which you said last episode.
You are the only listener.
I was glued to it. I love it.
I appreciate that.
Sorry about your parlay.
Oh, well, the good thing about parlays is that they're over immediately.
Yeah. One and done.
Okay, so you and Ashwin are talking smack about people, which is so much fun. He's a stats-driven guy.
Yeah, love a good number.
Lots of good. And I'm also a stats-driven guy. I also love the qualitative, which I think is why I'm attracted so much to these types of shows, because you do have both. And like, I love sports where it's mostly just stats. And I do love other reality shows, like the Mormon show that me and Julia just watched.
Oh, Secret Lives.
Right, and that's purely qualitative.
Oh, yeah.
But this is Survivor, and the way Big Brother at least used to be, it truly is the middle ground where you mm-hmm. got both. And that's, I think, now, and I haven't really thought of that before. So another light bulb moment. It's truly a middle ground of the subjective and the objective.
Yeah.
You get to decide what the rules are. You get to decide, is objective better for the win or is subjective better for the win? I think earlier seasons, objective reigned supreme more often than not. Maybe that's a little bit of an overgeneralization, but at least compared to the way the edit is now, it does feel like subjective rules the day with our generation a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? What's your take on objective versus subjective?
Well, so my major was cultural anthropology, and I took a lot of sociology courses as well. So something that Survivor always makes me think about is there is no only objective or only subjective, because in the end, we are all people repeating patterns that we've repeated since the dawn of freaking time. Not to say that we can't, you know, break out of them or be free thinkers, but, you know, in sociology, like group dynamics, it's like, what do they do first? You find a leader. What do you do second? Kill the leader. You know, it's like anyone who starts to rise a little bit too high, Annika's doing it now, even though I don't think she's like being annoying at all. She's just right. But, you know, if you make yourself a little bit too known, you're probably going home, you know? And so it's right. forever striking that balance between like driving enough to sort of build up your resume, which I was very shocked that the resume was a thing when I started watching. I feel like in the early seasons, you won by being loyal. Mm. And so if you screwed all these people over and voted them off, you weren't going to win $1 million.
Yeah, we were in that post 9/11 jingoistic
yeah.
country.
Yeah, like, yeah.
War.
You stuck to your people.
Yeah, you traitor.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was thinking that earlier. I was like, but I do think where American society was at that time also played into that. I really do, because we were in a time of sort of feeling like we all needed each other.
Yeah, for sure. Like you wanted to be able to trust the people you thought you could trust.
Right. And you weren't necessarily killing the leader at that time, because we truly needed one, is what we felt. We felt scared.
Yeah. Someone would like drive a tribe, like a little bus, like almost all the way to the end.
Yeah.
So I think you really can't divide the two, because you can watch a season like David versus Goliath, where all they talked about was it's a numbers game. It's a numbers game. And they never stuck to it.
Yeah.
Like when they blended into three tribes, people were like, okay, well, every single one of these tribes has three Goliaths on it and two Davids. I don't think any of them made it out, you know, with
yeah.
just like all three Goliaths in the tribe, because they kept being like, well, it's numbers. We just stick to that. And no one did. So I think.
And ironically, in David versus Goliath, they were trying to be so analytical. The person who won, and the reason he won is because he won out at the end, but the person who won was ended up just being the most affable guy.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, after this whole analytics play,
right.
Christian, Gabby, you know, the counterattack from Mike White and Angelina, it just ends up being the guy who's the nicest.
Yeah.
Right. After all that. And it is so, as a person who took a lot of sociology, I took some, but you sound like you took more. Do you think that's the way it goes most times? Do you think it's just the nice guy wins out in these situations?
There's pretty privilege,
mm-hmm.
right? Which definitely plays a part. People are like inherently more likely to trust people they view as attractive a lot of the time. So sure. that will play a part. And yeah, I mean, and that's what's so hard, I think, about balancing the like quote unquote resume with the social game is like people still have to like you,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Angelina, you know, say what you will, but like, it wasn't even to me that she was a villain, like that she did sort of like, but like,
yeah, she wasn't a villain. She was not a villain.
I think she thought she was the way she was playing.
No, I think she thought she was a hero.
No.
No, I think she's like, I don't think she's a villain, but I think she's she's the Lululemon.
In the final three, or maybe, I don't know, in the jury, whatever thing where she's talking about why she should win, she was like, I think if a man had played the way I had, he wouldn't have been hated as much. But I disagree, because I'm like, girl, you wanted to steal someone's jacket. That's not normal. People don't like that.
Right. And I think I get where you're coming from 100%. I think the way I interpreted that, and who knows what she really meant by it, who knows what Angelina meant by
anything.
I think what she was trying to say was, had she been a man, some of the villainous things that she did, or quote unquote villainous, that were, you know, attributed to her, could have been seen as strategy or heroic, mm-hmm. even as being a leader, as being the person in charge, which, you know, you're usually not voting for a villain at the end. You're voting for somebody you feel as though has heroic qualities on some level, even if it affected you poorly.
Yeah.
So I think she thought she was being portrayed as a villain, which is true. I think she really wanted to be portrayed as a hero, or at the very least a leader.
Yeah.
She got zero votes either way.
Yeah. I did not stand her.
I agree with her on some level. I do think if she was a man, some of her moves would have been seen as strategic.
That's true. Yeah. But there were certain things where I just couldn't, like all the fake acting. I just could not, like, it's sort of like how Soul sees through Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of Rome, like Rome is doing almost a similar thing. He thinks he's like God's gift to Survivor, right? Like
the world overall.
Yeah. Like he's like, when he came back from talking to Soul, and he was like, I calmed him. He has not a thought in his head that it's going to be him. And it like cuts the soul. He's like, like, you know, Rome's talking all this stuff. I'm pretty sure he's lying. Like he just thinks him and Angelina actually have kind of similar vibes.
I can see that. I think Rome's way worse, but I agree.
Well, and to answer Soul's question, is Rome a giant dingle, paraphrasing, or is he the world's greatest Survivor player? I do have to say, at Tribal, when he played his idol, mm-hmm. and he said he got it in the journey, I was like, that was pretty good. But what Ashwin pointed out was that Jeff very sort of clearly was like, this is a hidden immunity idol.
Right.
Are people going to pick up on that? Because I think what Rome doesn't want is people going out looking for an idol, thinking there's one back out there. But Jeff, I think maybe legally was obligated to say hidden. Yeah, he's like, I can deter people from thinking a new one has been placed.
Right, and also everybody knew that he already had it at camp.
That's true. Okay.
Honestly,
yeah.
The best thing about Rome's game so far is that he's such an obvious liar and threat and just egotist that he can almost get away with anything.
Right. Because like almost everything is a lie. You just, and well, okay. And that's what's interesting.
And it's almost like when somebody's always a liar in this society, they get a free pass.
Yeah.
I do you know anybody else that reminds you of?
You know, it's really familiar.
Yeah.
But I've actually blocked it out mentally. So
well, good luck with that coming up.
No. All right. I don't need that right now. We're talking Survivor. We're talking Fantasy Player. But oh my God, Rotten just killed me. I will never forget when he was like, I could have gone pro in the NBA or whatever. And someone was like, why weren't you drafted? He's like, I stopped playing in high school.
Yeah.
Can't do this. I would lose my mind if I was on a Tribe of Rome.
I'm actually with him. Had he been a foot taller?
You know, I can see it.
I can see it if you're 6'6 instead of 5'6, yeah. Whatever the hell you're. All right, we got two more things, parts of this segment here. So let's go into the penultimate one. You can't have a conversation with Flip about Survivor without talking about a winner pick, and not just a winner pick, but a who can't win pick. So we'll do your winner pick first, and then in terms of the can't win pick, for the purposes of this exercise, we're going to take out still Andy and Rome.
That makes sense. That tracks. Ugh, I've been the most scared of this portion. I hate the pressure.
Well, nobody's holding you to it.
Oh my God, I will in my heart.
And you are your own biggest critic. And no?
Jeff Probst will know.
He will know.
Sense it. He'll be like, she was wrong, and then he'll never let me on the show. Oh my God. Okay. Honestly, I've been thinking about this for literal days.
I'm so sorry.
Oh my God, it's so tough. Okay, I know someone said it already on the podcast as a number one fan and viewer. Someone said Rachel, and I like that. I agree. I can't tell if it's just because I like her, but I like her gameplay so far. I think she sort of like handled, quote, Andy the best someone could. Sort of. I think I could see her like playing a lot of sides, but not coming across as
the leader.
Yeah, the leader, or like too sneaky. I was surprised when she stole the rice. I thought there was going to be like a penalty. I thought Jeff was going to like take their Flint or something.
I thought the penalty was enough of getting yelled at in front of everybody.
No, I think because it came across as sort of like cute. I think like it would have been a way bigger deal if her tribe had gotten a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised they didn't do that, because I think it would have created some like interesting drama.
Maybe
if Jeff had been like, we're taking your Flint or
some retaliation against her from her own tribe.
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Right.
Even though she was trying to help.
Right.
Yeah.
Which it would have been, you know, sort of hard to figure out how to feel about it, because she was trying to help.
Right.
But then you're penalized. And I'm surprised they didn't.
Well, the good thing about Rachel is, like you said earlier, you pick a leader and then you kill the leader.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see her, just maybe it's because of her personality. Maybe it's because she's emotionally intelligent and she knows what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I see her being able to play the middle really well.
Yeah.
And maybe you also like her a little bit because you're both graphic designers.
All right. I was going to say it. No one had said that. I was like, oh my God, she's like me. No, but I do just think, I think she can sort of like play sort of any party that like comes up. Like she handled Andy when he was kind of freaking out. Like she managed to be like, we shouldn't be doing this, while being like, I care about you.
Right.
Like, I think that's really hard to do with someone who's freaking out like that. And she manages to still sort of get along with someone like Sam, who's like total opposite, you know, probably from her. Because when she talks about him to the camera, she's like, what is, I mean, I'm just like, some ain't right there. If you've never had like a piece of pineapple.
Let me tell you, sports radio people, I've been one. I've been around them.
So they're not all the same.
Sports radio guys are
meat and potatoes, baby.
They're like meat, potatoes, and like narcotic.
Misogyny.
Yeah. Well, no, there was like posters. This was 2016. There were posters in rooms where they were, you know, record their shows with, you know, like the Farrah Fawcett posters with the SI Sports Illustrated bikini swimsuits. Mm-hmm. There weren't really any women working there.
Not shocking.
I don't actually see Sam as that guy. I don't see him as like this misogynist guy. But like a bro, and a bro itself is like whatever it is. On its own, it's like fine. But you know, you probably hang around a lot of people who maybe say some things at times that aren't great and act ways that aren't great. And so to your whole point, even if it's unintentional, I'm sure he's bringing a little bit of that world onto the island. And for somebody like Rachel to be able to handle that personality and make him her ally speaks to her chameleon ability, mm-hmm. speaks to her adaptability.
Right. You can sort of clock him as someone you would not align with in real life, but fake it enough that he thinks, you know, you've got the enough of an alliance going on.
Yeah.
Also on Sam, I'm going to pick him as my can't win pick.
OK.
because of when Aniko was telling him how to cut the rope. And she was like, you know, like he's hacking at it for like a minute. And she's like, you know, it works better when you saw it. And he does one saw and it cuts.
Yeah.
I was like, that's you, baby. That's a metaphor. Him cutting the rope was symbolic of him cutting his own rope.
I mean, that's true. Like, yeah. You don't, a lot of times, you know, in a winter edit, you don't see somebody just like having a goof.
Having a laugh.
Having a, just like a moment where they just show their incompetence. And I'm sure there's plenty of stuff on the cutting room floor for winners showing their incompetence.
Oh, yeah.
You can't, 26 days out there, you're going to have some mess ups.
Yeah.
So, but to show it that early and to show it in that fashion implies, yeah, this guy isn't at least a serious threat to
him. Yeah, they're setting him up.
Right. Even if he makes it to the end, it's almost like this guy's kind of like a,
right,
just a guy. All right. We got one more surprise segment here. And I didn't do it on the first episode, but I did it last week and I'm doing it here. And so I think I'm going to try to keep this going. Actually, I'm going to do a surprise question at the end.
I'm already surprised.
I know you are. Catered to the guest's personality. Now, so Avery has a dog. Avery has a tiny, this is the tiny, not only is this the tiniest dog I've ever seen, this might be the tiniest pet, yeah, I've ever seen. Like, that's not like a hamster or a goldfish. Like, a thing that has four legs. Hamsters have four legs.
Ideally.
A thing that is out and gets walked. How, yes, about that?
Yeah.
And runs around the apartment itself or the house, whatever it is. A tiny little dog.
Tiny living.
Its name is Pocket. His name is Pocket. But on July 4th, when we went over there to Avery and Ashwin's house, the entire time Avery called Pocket Chumby. Yeah,
he's a little guy.
He's a little chumby guy. So Pocket, Chumby, whatever it is on any given day. And so, but something that Ashwin relayed to us even earlier than that is that Avery spends a large chunk of her time at home singing songs that she just makes up on the spot about Pocket slash Chumby.
This is true.
So what I want you to do, I want you to take the survivor player, whoever it is, that reminds you the most of Chumby. And I want you to make a little song up as if they were in your hands and they were looking right at you with their little bug eyes.
God.
Pretend it's Chumby. Who is the most Chumby-like survivor castaway out there? And let's hear it.
Well, usually when I talk about Pocket, I clench my teeth like this. he's so cute that it's like physically painful. I don't know if I'm going to do the teeth clenching for this.
Whatever works. Yes or no, doesn't, as long as you're happy with it.
Okay. It'd be like, Andy is a weird old guy. He's got crazy big old buggy eyes. He fell off of the beam. He freaks out his team. We'll see if he's here next week.
That was really good. I was thinking this was going to be like, Andy is Chumby. Andy is Alita Chumby.
That's how the real one sounds.
That's what I wanted.
This was a bit edited.
Can you do like literally just that as it with Andy? Can you do like in that one?
Well, usually I would take a song like Zombie and I would sub in Chumby. So I would just be doing the same thing with Andy's name so it doesn't quite work.
No, it does, because it's not Chumby and Andy. They both end in two syllables. In your head.
He's in his own head.
Yeah.
In his head.
Andy.
Yeah.
Avery, you're a star.
I don't know if the song will make the cut.
Oh, the song, we're leading with the song.
Oh,
we're leading
God.
With the song.
This is like exposing my deepest private singing moment.
When you come on Flippers Always Win, you gotta be ready to be vulnerable. It's like being a tribal council, right? You gotta be vulnerable. You were appreciate your insight. You have an interesting perspective on your own survivor journey. Always a pleasure talking with you. I'm sure we'll have you back as long as you want to be back.
Oh yeah, I'm ready anytime. You know, number one listener, number one fan.
You are, and if somebody wants to try to usurp that, good luck.
Good luck.
Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. As previously mentioned, we have no sponsorships on this podcast, so in lieu of ads, I would like to talk to you about my thought process of how to come up with these fake ads. Usually I just look around my surroundings and I see the things that are near me in my apartment, or think of things that are mundane and happened in the apartment throughout the week. And you know, right now I'm not seeing anything that feels original that I can make any sort of assessment or description of. So that's it. And we are back on Flippers Always Win. I am your host, Flip. Alongside me, as always, my partner in crime, Julia. Say hi to the lovely listeners, Julia.
Hello.
All right. We're off and rolling. So this week, as always, Julia will be going into a deep dive of one selected castaway's social media, the insights that she's gleaned from that, and what it ultimately means for that person's game. But before we get there, I just wanted to quickly do a little bit more on the tribal council from this past episode, because I thought we watched it a couple times. First of all, it was really crazy whenever you got six people and four different people get a vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a sign that things are amiss. But on the rewatch just there, I honestly felt like it was a masterclass. And of course, it's heavily edited, but I felt as though it was a masterclass by Keyshawn specifically.
Mm.
And it's interesting because the first time we watched it, he says the core four, and we're like, did he just have a huge blunder? But obviously, you realize, oh, there's two fours and everybody's in it. And then as it's going on, he's just so cool, calm, and collected. He's making it seem as if, did I lose out on conversations? Am I paranoid? What's going on with me? And then at the end of it, he just sort of flips the whole thing on its head and says, you know, the whole thing was a facade the whole time. We knew we were going to flip on each other. The cohesion was BS, and here we are. And it struck me as somebody in full control of his game at that very moment. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on not just the chaos, but who you felt as though performed well at that tribal.
Yeah, I mean, I think Keyshawn had the top performance at that retrieval. Oh my God.
Most eggs, Keyshawn.
I think Keyshawn had the top performance at that tribal. I do think that what he said, as far as the core four, that was intentional, meant to create confusion amongst his tribe mates. I think that was very smart. It creates confusion. It creates paranoia. And part of me wonders, is that why he and Teenie didn't vote the same way? Was she so confused by that comment that she didn't know what was going on?
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, it seems like Teenie and Keyshawn are the pair, right, of that tribe. And I was very confused by Teenie's vote, with Keyshawn trying to create that confusion and that chaos in tribal. He created a disconnect between himself and his closest ally. I do think that the benefits outweighed it there.
Right.
I think it was a great tribal council, but I also think he put a target on one of his allies.
Right. And didn't mean to. I would liken that to in football, when the quarterback is trying to draw the other team off sides with like a fake hard count, but then he ends up getting a false start.
Mm-hmm.
One of his linemen moves instead of the defensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
That it's almost like he was too good at what he was doing. He faked out his own teammate.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And if another idol is retrieved, it surely will impact the dynamics of the game. I almost wish it wouldn't be retrieved by the time the next go to tribal, because I would like to see without a power what this group of five would do. I think it's gonna, thing's gonna happen. They're gonna get a power again before they go to tribal.
But Rome still has a power. He has to steal a vote.
He does have a steal
and
a vote.
He told Teenie that, didn't he?
He did, and that's a good point.
So I think that's going to keep Teenie on Team Rome for at least a time.
Yeah, Teenie's playing scared.
Yeah. Clearly.
Well, either way, I think the best tribal this season, and I think one of the more sharp, intriguing, and ultimately entertaining early tribals of the new era. We're going to skip away from the Lavo tribe, and we're going to head towards the Gata tribe, are we not?
We are. This week's social media deep dive is on Annika. And I picked Annika Because I don't think she's long for this Survivor world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that her conflict with Sam that we saw this week is gonna bite her in the ass next time they go to tribal council. I was a little surprised the Gata tribe didn't end up going to tribal council just because of how big of an edit Annika got this episode. It felt like they were setting us up for her to go home, especially with the preview from before last episode,
which turned out to be a red herring.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that was very interesting with the part about Sam and Sierra, you know, are you dating or are you a couple or whatever she said.
Yeah.
When she was just quoting.
I agree that Annika is not necessarily long for the game, but Annika also isn't just some person. She has been at the center of the action for Gata. And not only did Gata not go to tribal this past time, they won. They outright won that challenge. They came in first.
Right.
And that's with Andy not being able to balance on that balance beam too.
I mean, Andy just continues to be a mess. I don't know what is happening with him.
Slowly but surely, he is digging himself out of that hole. And Annika is helping him do that because she is creating this, you know, it's not just her. Sam and Annika just, you know, they butt heads.
Right.
So all is well in Andy's world. He gave Sierra his shot in the dark. That was a good move.
That was a great move.
It was a great move. That's his first actual good move of the game.
But he did it out of paranoia. Like, this guy, he is letting his paranoia drive his game. And if he would just calm down, take a breath, he would be fine. He is imploding. And I think in this situation, in this episode, it did help him.
Right.
With his standing with Sierra and Sam. But I think that something else is going to happen down the road where he's just going to make a fool of himself again. And right. His tribemates are going to not be able to trust him and trust that he is a stable player.
Right. And I think he's shown nothing to say otherwise.
Right.
He certainly is letting his paranoia drive him. It drove him all the way to the bottom immediately. Now that he's on the bottom, it's almost like you have no choice but to play paranoid at that point.
I almost wish he went on the journey so we could see a Banu 2.0 of him just word vomiting.
Oh, man.
Everything.
Well, you know, last year I was one of the Banu boys, and so that would be... I'd be down for that. Maybe if there's another journey coming. You remember all the Banu boys. Yeah. We were all over social media, TikTok, doing live concerts. Yeah, it was a great time. All right, so Annika's social media, you're on her Instagram. What have you learned?
One, I think Annika is extremely beautiful.
Yes.
Her social media is extremely curated. Very manicured. She wants to seem like this cool girl who goes on all of these adventures. She has mostly pictures of her traveling in water, at the beach, going abroad, going to music festivals. You know, it's a very curated.
Now I know what you mean by that. And I agree looking at it. I get what you're saying. Let's take it back to Teenie's Instagram. Different vibes completely from Annika, but do you feel as though this is actually really more curated or manicured than, let's say, Teeny, who's also trying to make it seem like in their own way they're this cool person with a lot of friends doing cool things? It's different. It's travel. It's more aesthetically pointed. But is it really that different in what the end goal is?
No, I think it's the same exact... The motives are the same behind these social media posts. I think they both are trying to portray like this cool person.
In their own way.
In their own way. Teenies was more chaotic.
More casual.
Yes.
Casual, goofy person.
Right. And Annika's is very like she wants to seem like this chill world traveler that always looks very put together and beautiful and goes to these beautiful places with other beautiful people and is doing all these fun things. Now that I'm thinking about it, her Instagram is trying to scream cool girl,
mm-hmm.
chill girl,
mm-hmm.
And she is not.
No.
I mean, if anything, this episode showed that she is not a chill girl.
Right.
She needs to be in control. Mm-hmm. And I think that this Instagram feed shows that she has control over her narrative mm-hmm. in her social media.
You feel as though this need for control in the survivor sense is not a positive thing for her game.
No, not at all. No. I think that we've seen that she's rubbing Sam the wrong way. I imagine that she's getting on other people's nerves. And we know that Sam and Sierra are a package deal. And it seems like Andy wants to align himself with the two of them. I don't think that this is going to go well for her.
Yeah. Before this past episode, I was saying the next time they go to tribal, Sam's going. But now that I've seen Andy give his shot in the dark to Sierra, I think both Sam and Annika neither of them are playing it particularly cool with each other. I think they both are at fault. But I do see at this point, it's more probable that Annika is the first to go purely from a numbers sense, given that Andy seems to be in with Sam and Sierra.
Building on that, I think Annika has, in the Annika-Sam debacle, Annika has the disadvantage of being a woman.
Yes.
And so one, Sam is a stronger competitor physically, and that helps in challenges. And at this tribe-based stage, that's a big factor for some of these votes. But two, this behavior from Annika, unfortunately, I think from a woman, comes off as more annoying.
Right. Tell me if I'm wrong about this. This is not Survivor related for the first time in 3 episodes. But do you know of any podcasts that focus on like the psychology behind social media? I have a lot of thoughts on social media. A lot of them are negative, both in terms of the effects it has on people, like literally mental health wise, but also just for the vapidness of it. Yeah. Do you know of any podcasts that focus on that? I feel like I could honestly do a whole separate podcast talking about this particular realm that we live in 2024 of people's intentions on social media and the effects that it has on everybody else, themselves included.
I'm not aware of any podcasts that focus specifically on that. I'm sure that a lot of these wellness and health podcasts have discussions on it or have episodes based on that. It's a pretty hot topic, has been for a while. People think that what you put on social media or what you see on someone's social media is truth and is their life. But it's exactly, what I just said about Annika. It's what people choose to share with you. It's not every aspect of their life. And people are only, for the most part, only going to share the highlights and the good things.
I would love to see somebody's social media account, which is just the downers. And like, but not like in a way where that's like really true. Like somebody who just, maybe I'll start doing that. Maybe I'll just start posting just the worst moments and giving them captions of like, today was a good day.
You like drop a dozen eggs on the sidewalk. It's like highlight of my week.
I'm going to do that tomorrow. You said you had a caption. What's the one caption on Annika's Instagram that you're looking at that sticks out to you?
So all in all, her captions are a little bit like my captions.
You don't even post though.
Yeah, I know. But when I do, it's like sometimes an emoji, sometimes just a little quip about something.
Right.
But this one made me laugh. It says, LA Department of Transportation, hit me with another parking ticket. I dare you.
And then, and what is the picture that it's?
It's her at the beach. It's hilarious.
The lead photo here is like a silhouette of her facing the beach with her arms out. It's from behind. She has a very visually appealing Instagram.
She is, and you may not know what this is. She's a VSCO girl.
I don't know what that is.
So it's
educate me.
It's a photo editing, and I think you can share photos on the app, but it's kind of like the modern Tumblr girl.
Okay.
So I have a lookalike, and I have a personality alike.
And that is the first time that you've done both here.
And I don't know if you'll even know the personality.
Is it Ty Pennington?
No, it's not Ty Pennington. But the lookalike, once again, is a cartoon character. Can you guess it?
Can I get an era?
Once again, it's our childhood.
Let me take a look at her. I mean, I know what she looks like. Is it somebody on the Fairly Odd Parents?
No.
Am I on the right network?
No. It's a movie.
It's a movie? From our childhood?
Mm-hmm.
She's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I actually just don't know.
Princess Jasmine.
Princess Jasmine.
She has big eyes. She has a very angular jaw. Obviously, the dark hair, long hair.
No, I mean, she's very beautiful. Yeah.
The eyebrows. I think she looks just like Princess Jasmine.
Well, did Aladdin come out when we were kids?
Yes, it was one of my favorite childhood movies.
Well, no, but did it come out when we were kids?
It came out in the 90s.
Let's look this one up. I wasn't necessarily thinking Aladdin. I don't know what I was thinking. 1992. Okay. So more your era than mine. Okay, and personality-wise, who we got here?
Personality-wise, I don't know if you're going to know who this is. Spencer from Pretty Little Liars.
And why is this? As somebody who doesn't know Pretty Little Liars, what about it is the personality comparison here?
Need for control. It's my way or the highway.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of the ringleader, and in a lot of situations, it backfires. So...
I think somebody who was a more subtle version of what Annika's trying to do that worked well for them is Dee.
Mm-hmm.
Dee also needed to have control and also was the ringleader and also was like a get out of my way type player, but she hit it better, did she not?
Yes.
At times, at the very least. It really only came out when she really needed to use it.
Yes.
Like before going to tribal.
Right.
Not in daily camp life necessarily, right, that we saw at the very least.
Right.
It was strictly based on gameplay. And she had a group of people behind her because it felt like she had built those relationships.
And that's what Annika needs to focus on. She needs to focus on exerting her power in the actual game and not on their clothesline. Like she needs to not worry about all those little decisions around camp each day because she's going to really piss people off.
Yeah.
If she needs to control all of those aspects of camp life, nobody wants to deal with that, especially, you know, you're spending 24/7 with these people.
Yeah.
So if she needs to control the game, that could work to her advantage, but she needs to focus on that.
I agree with you. And generally, when you start off with this edit, it doesn't scream, I'm going to change right now. So I definitely agree with you that her time is limited.
Although look at my girl, Emily. Look at Emily. She came out as about as horribly as you could have. And she was one who needed control. And then she let that go. And she started playing smart. She found allies that could assist her. And maybe that'll happen with Annika.
The only difference there is that I don't think there's a Caleb coming to save her.
Yeah.
Emily was going nowhere until Caleb decided, I'm going to help you.
But I really like Rachel. I think Rachel's a smart player, and maybe she'll take Annika aside and be like, hey, you know, you're hurting our game. Yeah.
Julia, thank you. Great job again. Let's do a kiss for the listeners. Mwah! Gross for everyone. That is a wrap on episode 3 of Flippers Always Win. Thank you so much to Avery and Julia for sharing your thoughts and opinions on this episode. Had a great time and hope you did too listening. We will be back next week with episode 4. Special guest Ashwin, who is the boyfriend of Avery. It's going to be a fun conversation. We're going to get into some cool stuff. We're going to get into AI Survivor, analytics, deep dive, stuff I don't really know anything about. He's a smart man. Looking forward to having him on the pod. Have a great week, everybody. Take care. Looking forward to the next episode of Survivor. And this is where I would say a tagline if I had one.